From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Independent candidates are on everybody's mind. Aaron Rodgers on politics. He says, I'm laughing at both sides, because when I play both sides, I win every time. Boeing employees who installed the Max door plug are still unidentified. And John Curley is in the studio.
In the hizzle, as the kids used to say.
And
raise the roof.
John has done is he has not acknowledged anybody's presence for the last 5 minutes as he stood in the studio.
I'm working on my show.
He's looking at his cellular telephone.
I've got a mobile.
And has not made eye contact nor said hi to anybody. He's just stood there kind of
this
like...
This Aaron is doing his thing. There's a big car, garbage truck's overturned. This is big stuff.
You could have said hi to somebody, John. I mean, we're people too, John. I mean, gee whiz. Hey, how do you feel about those independent candidates
out
there?
Yes.
John, how do you feel about the
JFK Jr. polling at 15%?
I think that's actually Bobby's son to be there.
It's, RFK.
It's, yeah, there you go. So how do you feel about Bobby Kennedy's polling out there?
I mean, 15%. The incumbent has never won when a third-party candidate is polling in double digits.
I mean, I'm not so sure that Bobby Kennedy is going to be getting all that many votes.
No, he's at 15 right now.
15%. Yeah, but
would they pull from Biden, you think, more so than Trump?
I think they get a little bit of both, but normally the incumbent gets hurt most in that, historically speaking.
I don't know how, because Bobby Kennedy's anti-gun, John, and he's also very lib. And so I'm not sure if that there's enough anti-gun people to be pulled away from who anti-gun anti-vaxxers who would go to Bobby who would have otherwise voted for Biden that's enough to affect the election. Do you know what I mean? I think there's a lot of copium going on here.
Right, but I think you could get like a pox on both their houses and then you go for the third choice because you're just like, God, I don't, that guy's not there mentally and the other guy can't stand
him. We call them the double haters. New York Times calls them the double haters.
Double haters.
70% of Americans aren't happy with the two choices.
I don't think that there are really any independent candidates out there that are worth anybody's time. Marianne Williamson is out there in the, you know, if you look at the libertarian candidates, what they poll in their elections. I think the top one that I saw was the guy from, I think he was from Michigan. He got something like 20,000 votes total.
Okay.
Everybody else is basically in the 100.
In the vote totals.
It's so miserable out there.
No labels, that group that wants to talk about third parties. They've put a committee together to pick a presidential, a viable third party candidate.
Yeah. Well, look at the DNC did to Bernie, right? When Bernie was doing quite well and they said, no, Bernie, you got to step out. It's your time. Not your time. It's Hillary's time.
Yeah.
So the party doesn't like the third party and they can't control them. Robert Kennedy could pull, I don't know what percent from Trump and what percent from Biden. But if people go in there and they look at it and they're like, you know, God, just neither one. The double hater, that's what it is. I hadn't heard that term.
Double hater, New York Times goes up. What do you think about Aaron Rodgers?
Yeah, because
as a running mate.
For Bobby Kennedy.
It's not going to be Aaron Rodgers. It's going to be Yang.
Not Bowen Yang from Saturday Night Live.
No,
it was
Andy
wonderful.
Yang.
He can sing.
Andrew Yang.
Okay, yeah.
That's my guess.
No, that's not a bad pick.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers makes it interesting and makes people talk about it, but I don't know who came up with that. He wasn't going to run.
No, and I think on top of all of that, I think that Bobby Kennedy, if someone does vote for Bobby Kennedy, I think that that's a pretty solid IQ test for somebody, because Bobby Kennedy has got to be one of the biggest grifters I've ever seen in my life. I say that as a statement of opinion, a statement of fact for legal reasons.
Aaron Rodgers on the news right now.
Bobby Kennedy, in my estimation, is either mentally ill or just a very honed liar, because the stuff that he has on his website, all the research is basically trash.
Okay.
All of his policy platforms are some bizarre mix of Democrat and Republican kind of smushed together, but it's all under the veil of being anti-vax. John, have you ever looked into this? His website is a schizophrenic mess.
No.
Well, maybe America's ready for a schizophrenic mess.
Right,
maybe
right,
it's time.
Right. Yes. They're all mentally ill.
Did you hear what Jimmy Kimmel had the line about Aaron Rodgers, by the way, last night in the monologue? He's like, how many losing teams can this guy play for?
Ooh,
boom.
Well, I'm sure his 350,000 viewers enjoyed that joke.
I did.
Wow. This is what Spike does in the pre-show meeting. He goes, we should play this person's thoughts. We should play this Jon Stewart thought. We should play this Jimmy Kimmel thought. And I'm always like, I'd rather have people listen to my thoughts about it.
Or Spike's.
Or Spike's thoughts.
That was a funny joke. That's all.
So,
yeah, I get it.
So there was a Kitsap superintendent that was deeply upset about signs, John, being that we know that you are deeply upset about signs that have various and sundry lines on them. She's avoided jail time over allegedly stealing political signs. Now, John, I don't think that you would go to the extent of pulling the signs that say, in this house, we believe in science and we believe in whatever.
Having run for office and had my signs torn down all the time. It was
did they really?
All the time. And I called Rob McKenna. He goes, that's a good sign. I said, why? He goes, if they're stealing your signs, that means you're winning.
Yeah. Wow.
So what did your signs look like?
Well, my kids and I would go out every morning and put the signs out, and then on Saturday nights or Friday nights, somebody would tear them all down, and then we'd go out and put them back up again. It was when I was running for city council, elect John Curley, whatever.
And, did it have your face on it with that John Curley smile and that beautiful advanced hair?
No, no face. No, just a little $4 sign.
One sign.
Yeah. And a yellow sign. And I said, every sign I plant, I'll plant a tree. So I called something American Forest. I said, what's it cost for a tree? They said, it's $1 a tree. I said, okay, fine. I want them in planting in these areas. So every sign that was planted, I planted a tree.
How could you not vote for John Curley?
I did. I won by
60-something. Nobody knew. All the signs got stolen.
But it was weird. It was really, you took it personally. You drive down the road and like there's this tossed off.
How could you not take it personally? Yeah.
Absolutely. And it, because it's like, oh, okay. Well, then it says, well, obviously this is what they're resorting to. And there's many times my opponent's signs were there and I felt like pulling over the right side and just plowing them all down. But no, well, if it's not right for him, it's not right for me. So Miss Evans, who gets paid $208,000 a year as the superintendent of the schools there in North Kitsap.
That's John Curley money, apparently.
Yeah, that's big money. They got a lot of people make a lot of money over there at North Kitsap. So she didn't like the fact that people were against the bond. So in the middle of the night, she went up, grabbed the sign. The police caught her. There were two people that were had video and were waiting and watching. A guy named Scott Herden and Kim Gerlach. They had the videotape. They followed her all the way to Sons of Norway for a Rotary meeting, and then the cops came in and they got her. So she's stepping down, right?
But that's she is. But that level of I hate that candidate so much that I'm willing to tear down their sign. I have never experienced that myself. It's hard for me to empathize with it. Other than, you know, there's nothing that triggers me to such a degree where I say I have to take that down. I did it one time in college, and I regret doing it. I did it one time in college, and did I ever tell you this story, John?
No.
So I was walking through, University of California, Santa Cruz is 10 colleges that are spread out. So you have, you know, Rachel Carson, you got Porter College, you've got College 10. That's where all the cool kids go because it's just a number, right?
College 10.
Right. So at like one of these colleges, there is at Merrill College, which is way up in the Redwoods, a really beautiful college. There is, they have a bunch of dorms out there, and they're stacked really high. It's going to be four stories, so that you can look out and you look at all the Redwoods, really beautiful. And they'll have decks, and on one of these, I saw that the kids had thrown over a communist flag, hammer, sickle, the whole nine yards, and it was big. I'm not talking like a, you know, Amazon purchase. I'm talking like Alibaba. This thing has got to be 8 feet wide, 12 feet long, and it's just flowing in the breeze right over Merrill College. And so I was so upset about this that I went to the campus administrator for Merrill College. I walked into her office, made an appointment, and I said, I think that maybe someone should talk to those kids about that big old communist flag, about the amount of people who have, because if I was flying a Nazi flag, I'm pretty sure people have a problem
with it.
They'd
knock on your door.
And they would knock on my door. There's a lot of people who were killed in the Soviet Union. And a couple days later, I'm walking by, I see that the flag is gone. And now as an older, more mature person, I realize how kind of immature that was to do that.
Did you feel that way?
Yeah, because
you took the flag.
No, I didn't take it.
He complained to
somebody
administration.
They took it down because the campus administrator told them. I believe. I don't know.
Ratted him out.
I ratted him out, basically.
Oh.
So, and as an older, more mature person, I realized that it was well within their purview to do that. In the same way that the MAGA kids who were on campus at the time had their MAGA flags hanging out of there, because there were MAGA kids at UCSC.
Yeah.
And the same, you know, it didn't make a difference to me, but at the time, I was so kind of. I don't know what you want to call it, righteous indignance, right?
Sure.
I just think that now I would not do that. But at the time, that was the only time I got so
triggered. Are you equating a MAGA flag with a communist flag?
No, but what I'm saying is that there is a certain expression that I think that is appropriate for people to have, particularly when they're exploring political concepts. And if someone wants to be a MAGA person for a semester, and if someone wants to be a filthy Soviet for a semester, I think we should let people do that when they're exploring ideas.
That's
Mickey Gomez has a traffic update for us.
Yes, it looks like a garbage truck is on its side, and now all lanes are fully blocked on westbound I-90 at I-5 here in Seattle. So we're seeing a 2-mile backup. Drivers are bailing onto Rainier Avenue off-ramp, and if you can, you want to avoid this, try taking 520. I'll have more at the bottom of the hour. Cairo News Radio, real-time traffic. I'm Mickey Gomez.
Thank you very much, Mickey Gomez. We appreciate that. Spike, you ever get triggered enough to rip down somebody's political stuff?
Every day of my life. But I don't do it.
Right.
I don't do it.
What triggers you? What upsets you?
You know what triggers me. MAGA triggers me.
What?
The former President Trump triggers me.
Really?
It really does.
Why does he emotionally get under
your skin?
Because
I think he's an existential threat to our democracy. I think he's been living on Stop the Steal, which has been disproven countless times in court for the last 3 years. No. And now if you don't kowtow to Stop the Steal, you ask me if I was triggered, you trigger me. I'm triggered. That's what triggered looks like.
What I mean is a deeper, more core, because that's all surface level.
No, it's not. It's the core of everything we believe
in. What I mean is like that's all policy stuff. When people get triggered, what that means is.
I don't like the hair, Jack. It's the hair. I don't like the white around the eyes for after the spray on tan.
What triggered means in clinical psychology setting is that this thing reminds me of a past trauma or a past experience, which I then anachronistically place to now. And it affects me now, thus eliciting a panic response or an anger response or whatever it is.
I've misunderstood the term triggered.
Right.
I'm being legit.
Thank you, Andrew. So, but I'm curious about this. What on a deep emotional level upsets you about former President Donald Trump?
First off, I've been married for 30 some years. I'm the father of two daughters.
Okay.
And that kind of triggers me about Trump.
Okay.
The way he treats and has always treated women.
Okay. So this idea of like unfairness, bullying, you would say.
Well, I think it's more while my one wife was home dropping the latest kid off, I was doing this one. And while that one was, I was still with this one, but I divorced that one and married, slept with that one. And then this kid, I don't remember her name because I remember which marriage I was in. I'm not sure what years.
Sure.
It's a lot of things that trigger me about the former president. But
John, you ever get triggered by a political... Does Joe Biden trigger you, John?
No.
But he's mature.
You just feel bad, right?
You know who used to really trigger me was Bill Clinton.
I
was working in Washington, D.C. I flipped him off one day and I feel bad about it. He was out running.
What a moment.
He was out running, and I was driving, made a left-hand turn. He was there with two other guys, and he's running in place.
He used to jog
in the morning. And then I got there, and I thought I did it. Like, that was really bad. But I rolled down the window. I said, Mr. President. He looked over, he waved, and I gave him the bird.
You saluted.
Yeah.
You know what we could do? You know what they do in therapy, John, if you feel bad about it?
Do I need to call him?
No. Here's what we do. We'll have Spike be... President Bill Clinton.
Hello, John. Good to talk to you.
You get to apologize with your inner child, John Curley, to Bill Clinton. We could, if you guys want to go ahead and have that. John, please, if you would.
I seem to recognize you. Did you ever jog in the Washington, D.C. area sometime in the
midnight? I wasn't jogging. I was driving.
You were driving a nice car, if I remember correctly, too.
Yeah, it was.
He rolled down your window, if I remember correctly. And I was kind of running in place, which I did.
I actually ran more in place than I ran.
Did you know that? A lot of people don't know that about me.
Yeah, you were standing there jogging in place with really tight shorts on. You had very tight.
You know why I wore the tight shorts, John? Because they reveal what the voters want to know about their president.
Yeah, well, okay. And I saw you there, and when I made the turn, I called your name, president, and I saw you, and then I flipped you off. And I'm sorry, because it was very disrespectful to you, but I just couldn't stand the way you kept I just couldn't stand you at the time.
John, I feel your pain in how you remembered that moment. But let me say this to you,
yes.
And I hope you take this to heart and take it with you for the rest of your days.
Yes,
you flipped off the president. You referred to the office. You said Mr. President. You didn't say Bill.
No.
You didn't say Willie.
No.
You said Mr. President. You respected the office, and I respect you for doing that.
Wow.
Thank you.
I think we just had a beautiful
moment. We had a moment.
I just think we had a beautiful moment of healing
here.
Feel
a little better.
Let's go for cheeseburgers.
Thank you for that, John.
Thank you.
I just feel like...
Sorry.
You were right back there, weren't you?
I did feel bad about it. I saw him later on. I ran into him at something later on, and I was... Nice. And
I can't imagine how I would feel meeting a former president. I mean, I haven't had the opportunity.
I've interviewed like three of them.
Wow. Oh, see,
I interviewed Carter once. He'd written a book, his poetry book. It was horrible. And we had a stage manager who had just come back from 3 months after having open heart surgery. And he's the nicest guy. His name is Paul. And he's off to the side. And in our ear, IFB, it says the president's microphone or president's mic, the batteries are dying. So Paul... Please ask a long question so we can run. Paul can run the hand mic over to him.
Okay.
So it's on us.
To fill.
Right.
Yeah.
So back. It's live. So he's sitting there reading a stupid poetry. And then I asked a really long, elaborate, I'm just trying to come up with something. And Paul runs onto the set, with this black microphone that is made of metal that could look like a gun. And the three Secret Service guys tackle him
the stage
before he gets to the stage. And this guy who has a zipper scar from open heart surgery is thrown onto the ground and dragged off. And the audience was like, what?
Wow, you don't see
it even on camera. None of it happens on camera. And Jimmy Carter kept right on reading really bad poetry.
Who were the other two that you spoke to? Who was the other one that you interviewed?
Bush. Both Bushes.
Wow.
And Nixon.
No kidding.
Yeah. I interviewed, I actually did my imitation of Bush for Bush.
Why? Really? How was that?
It was weird because Barbara was standing there and she's like, and is that supposed to be funny?
Oh.
It didn't go well.
Wow.
What was the Bush one impression, John? If you could do it.
Doing that thing. You know, it's basically stealing
Dana Carvey's thing.
I was doing Dana Carvey doing Bush.
I was doing Phil Hartman doing that thing.
Because Bush took me, I'm standing there, and I said, how come you guys come in with big plans and never get anything done? He goes, here, I'll show you. Come here. Look out there. What do you see? I said, I see the Washington Monument. I see the Jefferson Monument. Yeah, but you don't see the bureaucrats. They're all in there. They got their, and they're just looking up. You got big plans. And you're like, yeah. And he goes, well, we'll wait 4 years. You'll be out. And he goes, and that's what happens. There's 2 million people that are through the process, and they just, anything you want to do, they're like, well, we don't think so. So they just slow everything down. You can't get past them. He said, that's why it's so hard to get stuff done.
And then you met the W. And that was a little, were you hitting him like how you hit Seinfeld?
I hit him a lot. Yeah, I'm like, whacking him on the thing, yeah. And I actually served Richard Nixon at the place called L'Auberge. I was a waiter, and he was there.
No kidding.
And I dropped two ice cubes on his lap, because it was a fancy French restaurant, and you had to take the ice, scoop it out with a scooper, and then put it in the glass, and then pour the water in, which was a pain in the butt. But as I poured the ice in, it skipped in, skipped out, and landed on his, and he had a brown pair of pants on, I'll never forget it. And then somebody came over to get a photo with him, and he stood there with his arm around, and there was this
wet spot.
And I was like, okay.
Thanks a lot, John.
There you go.
People think I've shown myself.
I'm not a crook.
Thank you, Mr. Hurley.
Who wet my pants?
We appreciate you coming on every Thursday.
Thank you. And Tuesday.
And Tuesday. Yes, please. Mr. Curly.
Tell Bill Clinton I'm sorry.
You can listen to Mr. John Curly every Monday through Friday on the John Curly Sherry Ellicker Show, where he does radio here. I just found that out on Tuesday. Did you guys know that?
Every Monday through Friday with stories like that.
Every Monday through Friday. 4 years on, COVID has reshaped life for many Americans. It is the anniversary. Well, it was a Tuesday was the anniversary when everybody was going
from
out.
From
the lockdowns.
Yeah, that's right.
I remember that day. You remember that day.
I do.
Did I ever tell you my story from that day? I tell it a lot, but it's a really
I don't know if I've heard yours. I got mine.
Couple of them. I guarantee you mine's better than yours.
Yep.
I guarantee it. We'll have a better story off when we get back right after this. That's right, our YouTube channel, which is having some technical difficulties recently, but we'll get through it together, just like how we all got through COVID-19. The 4-year anniversary of lockdowns was the Tuesday, I believe. And everybody on social media was sharing their pictures of having to go to the supermarket and it's empty, mm-hmm. and they were showing all this stuff. And then other people were doing this thing where they were like, the 2 weeks to stop the spread, looks like it's 4 years or whatever.
Okay.
My thought about COVID is summed up is that COVID-19 made everybody in America, other than me, go absolutely insane. And everybody lost their minds, and everybody went totally, everyone started hating each other, and everybody started yelling at each other, and we started radicalizing people. The reason that we have Marjorie Taylor Greene in politics is because she was radicalized by COVID-19. Hmm. You have a bunch of commentators who were still beating each other over the head about COVID-19 and COVID statistics and who did it better. Was it Ron DeSantis and blah, 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 blah. And basically, everybody's gone crazy except for me, and I resent the fact that we still have to talk about it to this day.
Well, we don't. We don't.
That is, So, on lockdown day, we're going to swap lockdown day stories. Mm-hmm. I remember that day because I walked into, I had already gotten all my provisions, and I had already gotten everything that I needed because I did not wait until the last day to
smart,
do so.
Smart.
And so we're driving away. I think Sarah and I were driving away from Trader Joe's. And then Sarah says, oh, we forgot a couple of things. I said, oh, we'll just pop into that Whole Foods really quick. Ugh. Pop in real quick. Words that I would die by. And when we go to the Whole Foods, there are people with 2, 3, 4 carts.
Oh, the mule trains. Yeah.
Filled with food.
You bet.
And I don't know why people don't understand that when you're buying like emergency food supplies, you know, it's the kale's going to go bad in about a week.
Sure is. You know what I mean? No human possibly eat that much kale in the time it's going to go bad.
So I'm walking down the canned food aisle, which is picked clean.
Sure.
There's nothing in there. And then as I don't need anything in the canned food aisle.
Honey, what can I make with okra?
Exactly.
Okra go with anything?
Right, exactly.
I know. Yeah.
And they see this guy, and he rounds the corner, and he's with his wife. And he's an older gentleman, and he looks like he's very well off. We're talking about gold ring, gold bracelet, Rolex watch, members-only jacket. And he rounds the corner, and he's carrying a cart in his – or he's carrying one of the little, you know, carry
baskets, thing.
Baskets, and his wife is pushing a cart, and they have basically nothing. And they round the aisle, and all the canned food is gone.
Yeah.
Completely gone. And he starts laughing hysterically. I mean, it's like Walter White in Breaking Bad.
Sure, yeah.
He starts laughing.
Maniacally
at what he sees. And then I slowly started to realize, like, is this the moment that am I witnessing a man snap in front of me right now? Because he's not moving out of the way. I'm only about 6 feet away from him.
Uh-huh.
He's blocking my way through the aisle. I either have to turn around and walk backwards, exposing my back.
Yeah, I was going to say.
To Jack Nicholson as the Joker here.
He's dragging one foot with an axe in his hand.
And the other thing is that all the cans are gone, so I have nothing to defend myself with if he does start charging me.
Okay.
Now, if we all remember the wise words from Hunter S. Thompson, you can turn your back on a man, but you can never turn your back on a drug. And so I slowly started to step away from this man as he is staring into the middle distance and laughing. And so then
did you just back away?
I just backed away.
Kept your eyes
like
on.
I came across a mama bear in the middle of the trail.
Yeah.
Just slowly maintaining eye contact, backing off.
Mm-hmm.
And I round the thing and I bump into Sarah and she goes, "What's wrong?" And I was like, "We have to go now.
Now. Now.
Right. And so.
Sure.
But the thing that I noticed about my COVID lockdown day was I told you this earlier, but I tell this story again. You want to know how pronounced the racial divisions are in the United States, right?
Okay.
This is my example of this. I got my COVID provisions from a bodega in Santa Cruz, California.
Oh, okay.
Because everybody went to the Safeway, to the Trader Joe's, to the Whole Foods, to the Save Mart, to the Circle K, to the S Mart. Shop smart, shop S Mart. So we go to the bodega. No line. No one's rushing. No one is hoarding anything.
Right.
But this bodega has everything that anybody would ever need, right? The only difference is that the people who own and operate this bodega they speak Espanol. And so if you can speak just a little bit of Spanish, es pequeñito, you can navigate your world. You can navigate through this,
you're welcome.
So I got toilet paper. I got canned food. I got everything that I needed. And all their shelves were stocked full. Why didn't anybody think to go to the bodega? Because it had never crossed their mind previously. Because all they see is Modelo Especial, and they think it's a liquor store. They don't know that you can go in there and you can get anything you want.
You get what, man.
I was getting steaks. I was getting avocados. Everybody else is weeping and crying at Trader Joe's. What will I do without my gingerbread cookies?
Yeah,
and
seriously.
I'm walking through the bodega just, you know, singing Menudo. You know, I'm having the best time of my life.
Boy.
Right? I'm singing Selena, you know. Yaddy, daddy, daddy, daddy. You know what I'm saying? I'm just having the best time of my life.
A good shopping experience.
Walking through this bodega. All I'm saying is that this is why I believe in multiculturalism. And this is why I think multiculturalism is beautiful, because it literally saved my life, right? Literally, the best decision I ever made was to make friends with the fine people who own that bodega.
Now, I told you that the lockdown saved my life.
Because you had a heart attack?
No, that was 6 months later.
Because you gained 30 pounds?
No, that was a year later.
Because your kids were out of the house?
Yeah, no, my kids were home.
Oh.
it's kind of a tangent story, but, you know, they had locked down the schools. They had canceled school, right? Things in the city where we were shutting down.
So you weren't threatening to kill kids anymore?
No, that's kind of another sidebar. That's for our YouTube channel segment. No, my kid was home, so my kid wakes me up at midnight, and I smell smoke in the house.
Oh.
Right? My kid was still up at midnight, because it was at a time of sophomore in high school, and going to bed at a decent hour, good kid, good grades.
Yeah.
And my kid was like, Dad, I smell smoke. And I'm like, yeah, I smell something too. And 15 minutes later, the fire department was at my house, because my house was on fire.
Yeah.
If, without COVID, we're all sleeping, we're in a house that's on fire.
Oh, okay.
So I have to look back with some romanticism about the COVID lockdown, because... In a way, my kid being home, my kid being awake at midnight saved our family's lives.
Not only that, but saved all your Bruce memorabilia.
That's right. Can you imagine? I couldn't replace any of that.
Right. I mean, the kid goes, that's sad. The Bruce memorabilia goes, that's a pain that never leaves.
Never leaves.
You wouldn't have survived that, well, even if you made it out of the house.
It would have been so embarrassing to be walking away from the flames with arms of autographed items while my kids are trying to climb out a second-story bedroom window alone.
Right, exactly.
That would never have... can't reframe that.
No, right? That would look really bad. Right. Like, you're literally pushing your kids out of the way, right? I got the signed poster.
This.
I got... Go back in and get the guitars.
Get the set list from Jersey from 83. Go get it. Go get it.
All right.
Well, it's not to say we didn't spend a year, 6 months, hoarding paper.
Yeah.
Waiting in lines. Yeah. Looking for empty shelves. We all went through it.
All right. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Spike and I will discuss what we shall discuss next. Mystery segment.
It's
going to be a surprise.
We kind of teased earlier about it.
I don't want to talk about the
that's
Boeing.
Great. Then let's not. Boeing, I like it. Good.
Okay.
We're calling an audible.
The Boeing employees who installed the MAX door are still unidentified. Right.
No paperwork, no video. What?
What? All right. But we'll talk about something else when we get back right after this. Spike, I'm always talking about volunteering.
Yes, you are.
I told you about, I put in my application to be a foster dad for kitties.
That's fantastic.
So I put in with the Seattle Humane Society. Nice. A listener texted into the show and they said, Jack, I think that you should volunteer to be a foster cat dad. So for reasons. And I said, that's a great idea. So I contacted the Seattle Humane Society, put in my application. Said, we might get back to you in like 2 or 3 weeks. We got a backlog of people. I assuming because I'm a bit of a household name here.
Sure,
I'm assuming that I got bumped to the top of the list.
Right,
so I get the email back, and I'm doing the orientation on Sunday.
What, this Sunday?
This Sunday.
That's awesome.
But my concern is basically this: is that I have just learned what a foster fail is, and I'm almost positive that's going to happen to me when I foster a kitty, because I signed up to foster senior cats.
Mm-hmm.
And that are hard to adopt.
Yeah.
And nobody, I'm talking about, these are cats got to be 16, 17 years old. Yeah. Right?
Well, I know that you have often sought to be a safe haven and a home for the pet nobody else's want.
That's why I'm friends with Billy Sunshine.
That's why you work with me. That's how I got this gig. I was at the broadcast Humane Society.
Yeah.
And other broadcasters came and went.
They're looking at me through the glass.
I'm sitting there old in my cage. I'm like Griselda from, from Cats.
So, but here's my question. Laura, I need you to help me out with this. Should I just be upfront with them that I'm emotionally compromised and that I'm deeply codependent? And if they tell me to take care of a senior kitty, I will likely just end up adopting it until it dies?
No, you should lie to them.
Okay.
Because everyone interacting with an animal shelter is emotionally vulnerable.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Sweet,
very
has
good.
A big heart.
Yeah.
And they're going to see this coming from a mile away.
Yeah. They're just going to know, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think foster fail, if I understand it correctly, means you fall in love with the cat you're fostering and you want to keep it.
Yeah, that's basically what
foster
happens.
Fail. It's a foster that you are just keeping this cat company and safe and loved until they get a permanent home?
Yeah, but other people do with kittens. And I signed up specifically for older kitties that have shelter problems. And and I also signed up to do bonded pairs. And so,
like more than one cat that are together being separated is going to really be bad for
them. Yeah, that's emotionally bad for them. So I signed up for that. But here's my problem is that I am so emotionally codependent on things. Like when Nora was filling in, I asked Nora if I could get her anything, and she said, I want a LaCroix. For the next 5 consecutive days, I got Nora a LaCroix without her asking because I'm emotionally codependent. I have such a problem with this that I need to work on it. So, but now I'm worried that codependence is going to transfer over onto the kitties.
You have a half dozen cats.
Right, exactly. And I'm going to end up with 6 or 7 of these bad boys.
Oh, that'd be great.
Right? No, that'd be bad. Well, that'd be bad for me.
Is there a better way for a pet's life to the rainbow bridge?
Yes.
Than to spend it with you, man?
No, because I'm rich and I could, you know, hang
seriously,
out with them.
Seriously, it's like fresh sardines for everybody.
Right, exactly.
You got Amazon Fresh bringing you like buckets of sardines on a daily.
Yeah, that's the plan.
I think they're already in heaven.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You are.
So
that's wonderful.
That's what I signed up for. But I was surprised with how like simple the background check was. Because technically I could be anybody, right? But maybe it's because I'm such a household name in this area.
You do live your life right here at the radio. You're very transparent and authentic about who you are and what you love and what you're worried about in life.
Right. So, I mean, it's, for me, though, it's more so I just thought, you know, how do you give back in some way? Do you know what I mean? And so I already give money to people.
Yeah.
And so I thought,
thought you meant how do you give back to cats?
More so like I always think that people are always, there's an inherent contradiction that people have in their minds where they say government bad, but then they don't do anything.
Right.
Where they go around, they go, the feds aren't doing anything. This local government's not doing anything. And so my thought is always, well, you have to go and you have to do it yourself. If nobody else is going to do it, you have to be the person who volunteers. You have to be the person who goes to soup kitchens. You have to be the person who goes and speaks at rehabs. You have to be the person who whatever it is. And so in order for me to live that fully, I feel like I had to do this. But also because like when I'm in my apartment and I'm just hanging out, sometimes I just want to see a little kitty. You know what I mean?
Happy faces.
Just a couple of ears over my couch. That's awesome.
Curled up on you, purring, feeling that love.
Speaking of, by the way, things that are ending, the show is hard segue. Aww. Andrew, A+ today, buddy. Great job there. Nate Connors. Dang, is that a fitted tee guy?
Fitted Seahawks t-shirt.
Vintage. Dang. Look at that. Vintage. Yes. Cool. Nate Connors back at it again with the vintage tees, man. A+.
They make that in my size?
Laura, no. Laura, okay. I give you an A+ as well. And Spike, you have a solid C today.
Thanks.
He is solid C.
Yeah, I apologize for losing my grip on reality for a moment there when John was here.
That's okay.
I was triggered. At least I was what I thought was
John
triggered.
Is very metrosexual. Here is your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
And you get impeachment.
And you get impeachment.
Look under your chair, everybody.
Hey, look under your chair. Who's getting criminal indictments? You all are, and you're going to have to pay the taxes on it.